So if you take a look at number 24 on your sheet, so remember again, we spoke about the various takanos of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Zecha l'chorban, zecha l'mikdash, the idea over here of eager anticipation, mourning for that which has been lost, while at the same time eagerly anticipating that which, Emir Tzashen, is hopeful to come. But I want to show you another very fascinating takana that at first glance doesn't really seem to matter all that much, but then as we go on, you'll begin to see it's incredibly meaningful. Take a look, number 24, on the last page of your handout. V'idach, there was another takana. Listen to this. Disanya. Gershin is gayer bizman hazeh. Sarach sheyafrish ruba likino. So this is actually very interesting. If a person converts, he has to go ahead and separate out rova likino. So if you take a look at number 25, Rashi says over here, rova shekel, dahinu chatzi diner, vehein hein demei kan. Shahager chayiv bekarbon kidisanya. So this was very interesting. So without getting into all of the details over here, the halacha is as follows. Part of the process for conversion was bringing of a karbon. Where do we see that that a convert has to bring a karbon? Ask this question. Where do you see some type of historical precedent? I'm sorry? Karbon Pesach, good. Where else? Well, a little bit. Let me ask you this question. The truth is, that's an excellent answer, but let me fine tune a little bit. What? Yes? Oh, good. Earlier in history, though. Remember again, let me ask this question. When did Klal Yisrael become Klal Yisrael? Har Sinai. This is very important that, you know, sometimes you refer to Avraham Avinu as the first Jew. Was Avraham Avinu the first Jew? No. Avraham Avinu was a monotheist. I don't know that he was the first monotheist either. Avraham Avinu was the ambassador of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was not the first Jew because there was no Judaism. The Jew, ultimately, was a Ben Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the founder of a spiritual dynasty. And again, even if you trace it through the Avos, remember again, the Shvatim are called... They're called Bnei Yisrael. But why are they called Bnei Yisrael? Because literally, again, they were the sons of Yaakov. You know, they're not called Bnei Yisrael like we're called Bnei Yisrael. That was a literal familial definition. They were the children of Yaakov, whose name was changed to Yisrael. The designation of Am Yisrael, we become a people at Matan Torah, Sinaitic revelation at Har Sinai. That's when our national identity is solidified and concretized as Am Yisrael. To a degree, therefore, what's interesting is at Har Sinai, we didn't just receive the Torah, but in essence, we underwent a conversion. We underwent a conversion, which, by the way, is incredibly important. Why? Where did we learn Hilchos Geirus from? Where did we learn the laws of conversion from? From Matan Torah. Good, excellent, right, excellent. Okay. True. We learn actually the laws of conversion from two primary places. Number one, Matan Torah. Number two, Rus. Excellent. Two places. But from Matan Torah, what we learn are a lot of the procedural pieces. By Matan Torah, we learn the fact that remember, conversion requires tvila. There is no conversion without immersion in a mikvah. Conversion requires... So remember, again, because Klal Yisrael immersed themselves prior to Matan Torah. We know that conversion requires Kabbalas HaMitzvos. The prospective convert must accept upon him or herself the responsibility for all mitzvahs. Where do we learn that from? Na'aseh v'nishma, right? Klal Yisrael makes a statement, na'aseh v'nishma. And again, so from, just as an aside, we'll pause here just a moment. From Rus, what do we learn? So from Rus, we learn perhaps one of the most well-known details of Hilchos Geirus, which is that when someone goes ahead and tries to come to convert, the first order of business is, nicely, we try to push them away. We essentially tell them, what are you thinking? And by the way, that is a real statement. We say, you know, understand, Jews, we have not cornered the market on God, nor have we cornered the market on the afterlife, on Olam Haba. You could be a righteous Gentile, and for only 7 mitzvos, you can go ahead and earn yourself a beautiful place in Gan Eden. Whether it's the same Gan Eden, different Gan Eden, it doesn't make a difference. You get to enjoy all eternity in the afterlife, and all you need are 7 mitzvahs. So we say to a non-Jew, you do not have to become Jewish to become holy. You do not have to become Jewish to become beloved by God. You do not have to become Jewish to become special. Right? You could do all of those things in your capacity as a Gentile. Becoming Jewish just adds on to all of your different levels of responsibility. We learn that from Rus. The other piece we learn from Matan Torah is that part of Geirus is a karban. a Gentile, meaning a convert, when he or she converts, has to bring a special carbon, a carbon for Gerus. So again, the value of this carbon was a half a dinar. That was the amount of the value of the carbon, a half a dinar carbon. You bring a kind, you bring burnt offerings. Okay, very interesting. The problem is, this creates a modern day issue. What's the modern day issue? There's no karbanos yet. So take a look at 24. So the Gemara says again, the Sanya, Gershin is Gaya Bizmanazeh. If a Ger went ahead and converted in these days, Sarah Shiyafish Ruba Likino. So this is actually fascinating. What do we tell the person to do? What do we tell the person to do? Set aside money. So let's say, for argument's sake, the carbon is $25. You should just actively go ahead and set aside $25 in your Mashiach jar, your carbon jar, and that way when Mashiach comes, that money will be ready, and you'll bring your carbon with that. Okay. Amar Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Shimon Elazar says, Kvar nimna aleha Rabbi Yochanan ubitla mipnei hatakana. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan went ahead and revoked this halacha. Leaving aside the mechanics of revoking rabbinic law, that's not our topic for right now. Let's just take it at face value. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and says, nope, I don't like this halacha anymore. If you convert, what's the halacha? If you convert, do you have to bring a karma Mashiach comes? Yes. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai can't change that. That's the halacha. What is he revoking? He's revoking the need to set aside the money. What he's saying is the original takana was that if you converted, Chazal actively wanted you to set aside that money. You could open up a Gerus CD, right? And you put that money aside. That has to be there when Mashiach comes. The mitzvah, meaning you had to actively set aside that money. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, look, when Mashiach comes, you're going to have to bring a carbon. The truth is, remember, when Mashiach comes, all of us will probably have to go ahead and bring karbanos for something, right? Every single woman who's given birth is going to have to bring a karban yoledes. And every person who accidentally violated Shabbat is going to have to bring a chatos. So chances are there's going to be a long line by the third Beis HaMikdash, when Sasha Mashiach first comes, all of us catching up on our sacrificial obligations. So in that respect, the ger is no different. What was different by the ger is that he was told, or she was told, you have to actively demarcate and separate that money in a clearly discernible way. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and says, no, you don't have to. You still have to bring the karban Mashiach comes. That we can't circumvent. That is a biblical obligation. But there is no need for you to actively designate or segregate the money for later use. So the question that comes, and if you take a look at number 26, let's analyze this a little bit. So the Rambam writes, Umahu karbanas hager, what was the carbon that a ger had to bring when he converted? Olas behema, either he brought an ola, which is an animal that is fully burnt on the mizbeach, of a behema means an animal. Oshte torim, oshne b'nei yona, two pigeons, two turtle doves. Ubizmanaze, she'in sham carbon, sarach mila utvila. So this is actually very interesting. So now writes the Rambam, there's no Beis HaMikdash now. So now what do you do? What do you do to convert? Mila, for a man, there's circumcision, bris mila, and for both men and women, there is tevila. Now there's an interesting discussion, because what does the Rambam, what is he leaving out? Kabbalah HaMitzvos. So this is an interesting discussion in general. You know, conversion is probably one of the most contemporarily divisive issues within the ranks of the Jewish people, in terms of what the criteria are for conversion, who has the right to go ahead and oversee conversion, who qualifies for conversion, what level of Shemira Samitzos, Kabbalah Samitzos, and I say, so again, it's just interesting here that the Rambam does not include that. Like I said, not our topic for today. So again, what do you see? According to who is the Rambam holding like, based on the Gemara Usa number 24? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Rambam says, is the ger obligated to bring the carbon? Of course. But what doesn't the ger have to do? The ger does not have to go ahead and separate out the money. Which obviously leaves us with the following question. And again, the Magid Mishnah number 27 discusses this dynamic and discusses how originally there was an obligation to separate out the money. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and says, you don't have to separate the money. So what's your question on this? Why? Like, what was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai trying to accomplish with this takana? What would you say? Any thoughts? Yes?
Maybe the ger wouldn't think he's like a full ger until Mashiach.
Excellent. So if you take a look at number 28, so this is actually from an interesting sefer titled Chachamim, which is a multi-volume series that essentially are biographical biographies of the various Tanoim and Amoraim. So in here he writes something amazing. Before we answer a question, he contrasts this idea that, for example, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't weigh in on other similar things. So, for example, one would have thought maybe Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai let's take a step back. The simple answer as to why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't want people separating out sacrificial funds is why. On a simple level. What's going to happen inevitably if you go home today and you put $100 on your dresser for sacrificial funds? Chances are that money, Halavai Mashiach should come today, you won't have to worry about it. But chances are whenever you leave money lying around for different things, that money ends up getting used in different ways. Right? So I'm gonna sit with $100 on my dresser until Mashiach comes. So, and what? I'm assuming it's just gonna stay there. Something inevitably is going to happen to it. So on a basic level, you could say that was logical of Yochanan ben Zakkai, that again he was nervous to allow you to have sacrificial funds lying around out of a concern that you may come to end up using it for something else. What happens if you use sacrificial funds for something else? Right? It's not good. It's not good. It's no different than if you go out and you open up the pushka in your home and use those funds for something else. You're not supposed to do that. It's illegal use of funds. So that's the most basic level. Yet what Rabbi Lau points out to number 28 is something very interesting. He brings up other examples. If you take a look, if you look on the right-hand paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines in right after the period. Last two words on the line. Dugma. Kaspe Meiser Sheni. Nishmuru b'chol tkufa satran v'amuroi. V'yesh masores shemeidos al minag liftos es pedus ha-maeser sheni, b'mechir malei, b'lishmar as ha-kesef lizman she'ibana ha-mikdash. So Rabbi Lau quotes an amazing practice. There were those who used to go ahead and set aside maeser sheni money. Remember again, what's maeser sheni? What's maeser sheni? So maeser sheni is, it's one of the tithes, but what's the halacha with maeser sheni? What do you do with it? Right? So no, maeser sheni is yours. It belongs to me. The caveat is, I have to take it to Yerushalayim and use it to buy food in Yerushalayim. That's the caveat. It belongs to me. I have full use of it, but it has to be used in Yerushalayim. So he quotes over here, practices, even after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, of people still setting aside Maaser Sheni funds. They were setting aside Maaser Sheni. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does not weigh in on that. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never says, well, I don't like that practice. So again, if this was an issue ultimately of just allowing sacrificial funds to lie around and being concerned that someone's going to accidentally misappropriate sacrificial funds, then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai should have voiced his concern with people leaving aside Maaser Sheni funds. Yet he didn't do that. The only place that he voices his concern is over here by the carbon money of the ger. So Kutamar Lau writes, this is amazing. He says, "Bishum makom." Look, it's right after that footnote number 19. "Bishum makom lo shamanu." "Bishum makom lo shamanu." Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai chacham achir ma'arim al shmiras hakesef hazeh mechashash litakala ve'imkein ma'nishtane kesef hakan shel ger mikaspo shel Yehudi shemafrish perosav. So if that's the case, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not voicing his dissent or his concern with people leaving aside Maaser Sheni funds, then why is he voicing his concern, or why is he voicing his opposition to people setting aside and leaving gerus, right? Conversion carbon funds. So look what he writes. This is beautiful. Mira, imkein, shechashoshu Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, hu meitakol acheres. You're right. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is stating that I don't want people actively separating and leaving aside, setting aside carbon funds for their conversion had nothing to do with a potential misappropriation of carbonic funds. What was the concern? The concern was Mikir Barzel, Hamavdil ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ubarav. What does that mean? Mikir Barzel, Hamavdil ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ubarav? Right, what does Kir Barzel mean?
An iron
wall between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and those who fear him. Lichora, Biglal ha'edra karbon, e'efshar lehiskayer. So this is amazing. Says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai something dramatically amazing. So imagine, you're the person, you're the convert. So you go through your whole process, and you know, again, if you ever know people who undergo the process of conversion, it's an incredibly difficult process. I don't just mean because of the learning, or because of the other, you know, because of the lifestyle changes. But you know, again, there's family considerations. You know, any time that a child does something different than his or her parents automatically feel what? rejected. This is a very important idea. You know, we see this. Let's say parents are, quote unquote, less frum than their children. So most times parents don't say, oh, I'm so happy my kid is frummer than me. So parents feel, what's wrong with the hashkafa? What's wrong with the life ideals that I gave you? There's a form of parental rejection. The same way that if parents are one way and the child is less than them, parents also feel rejected. It's understandable. We raise our children with values that we think are good. And when our children choose to do things that are different than us, it just creates a certain feeling of rejection by the parents. Parents get over it because they understand that children have the right to make their own decisions. But it's painful nevertheless. When a person converts and their child is literally going in and accepting a dramatically different religion, different lifestyle, and by the way, they know the fine print in Judaism. What happens when a person converts? What's their status? Like a newborn. Which means that their relationships, even to their past family, to their biological family, are not always recognized in the eyes of halacha. It's exceptionally dramatic and traumatic. So a person makes this major leap of faith. Major leap of faith. And now what's going to happen? I know. There's milah. There's tevilah. There's Kabbalah Samitzvos, there's Karban, so I've done everything I have to do. And what's sitting right there next to my Shabbos candles, every week in, week out, what's sitting there? My Karban money. So how is that going to make the ger feel? How is it going to make the ger feel? I'm not complete. Which, by the way, that's not a false statement. Meaning, this process of gerus is not complete. Her process of gerus is not complete. There is still a Karban. Now again, when we say not complete means that there is still another part in the Geirus process. Is the person fully Jewish? Yes, absolutely. If it's a man, can you count him as a minion? 1,000%. If it's a woman and she has a baby, is that child Jewish? 1,000%. But there is still a part of the process that is left unfulfilled. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is concerned, how is that convert going to feel? How is that person going to feel ultimately if what? If at the end of the day, I see that there's a part of my process that's not fulfilled. I'm going to feel michutz l'machane. I'm going to feel outside of the fold. You know, already, we have to. You know, the Torah tells us there's a mitzvah v'ahavta nesager. What's the obvious question on the mitzvah? The mitzvah to love the convert. What's the obvious question? I'm sorry. Right. There's a mitzvah v'ahavta l'cha kamocha. So a ger is a Jew. Why doesn't the ger fall under the umbrella of v'ahavta l'cha kamocha? What's the answer? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized that we as a people have difficulty with people who are not like us. And we're not always the most warm and embracing people. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us an additional mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to love every Jew, and there's an additional mitzvah to go out of your way to love the ger. Why? Because the ger is an outsider. The ger is someone who often comes without extended family. The ger is someone ultimately who often again had to sever many different relationships and ties. So you better go out of your way to be warm and loving to them. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and he says, we can't create a situation where people feel alienated. We can't create a situation where people feel michutz l'machaneh. Our job is to build bridges between Jews and God, not to create divisiveness, not to create separation, and not to make people feel outside of the fold. So this approach in general is amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understanding that ultimately, again, the job is to make Jews feel enfranchised. The goal is to make Jews feel part of the Judaic fabric. The goal is to make Jews feel beloved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not, you count, but you don't. Or not, you're a full Jew, you're a part Jew, you're this. Or, we love you, even though you're not complete. No, the goal is to allow everyone to find their place with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a meaningful way. Why is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai the one who does this? Or, it's good logic. Why didn't anyone else think of this? So first of all, it could just be that it's just Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, well said, is so thought out in everything he does. Why else?
Plans for the future.
I'm sorry?
Plans
for the future, good. Why else? Let's go back historically, what's unfolding over here?
Korban.
Right? Remember again, Hadrianic persecution is going to start up very shortly. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realizes that to a certain degree, Klal Yisrael, the ranks of Klal Yisrael have been decimated, not destroyed. Baruch Hashem, Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. Klal Yisrael always survives, but we've suffered a major blow. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, now is not the time to make any segment of Jews feel disenfranchised. Now is the time when we have to circle the wagons. Now is when we have to bolster the ranks. Now is when we have to strengthen Klal Yisrael. And in order to strengthen Klal Yisrael, literally, we need all hands on deck. We need everyone to feel a part of it. We need everyone to feel like they are an equal member of Klal Yisrael. We can't have ketos. We can't have this group and that group. We did it. Remember again, we had different groups. And what was the result of having different groups? Yerushalayim was destroyed. Right, we had the Baryonim, we had the Prushim, we had the Rabbanim, we had the Ruffians, we had all of them. And divisiveness literally brought Yerushalayim to its knees. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, we cannot do this anymore. We have to figure out how to create a sense of achdus within Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, by the way, does that in a variety of different ways. What's interesting is, he starts over here with the people who would be most prone to be on the periphery. The people who are most prone to be on the outside of the circle, outside of the societal framework or fabric, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes to them, brings them in. Stop setting aside your money. You know you have to bring a carbon. You tell your children you have to bring a carbon. You make sure that the mishpacha knows you have to bring a carbon. Fine. There's no need to actively set aside the money now. All in an effort to enfranchise Jews, to make Am Echad, to create a sense of Achdus. And the truth is, this is incredibly beautiful and incredibly amazing. See Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai telling us, remembering the Beis HaMikdash, yearning for the Beis HaMikdash, that's not enough. Let's remember what brought us to our knees. Remember again, you know, we know, Gemara tells us why the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, why? Right? Ultimately, again, because of Sinas Chinam. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, listen guys, if we're going to correct this, then we have to do whatever we can. You know, correcting Sinas Chinam is not simply stop hating people, right? Stop hating people is a good first step. But Sinas Chinam, correcting Sinas Chinam requires ultimately some type of getting up and creating positive energy within the ranks of Klal Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai eliminating the need to separate out the karbanic money is his way of bringing the group of Geirim inside the fold of Klal Yisrael. An incredibly and dramatic idea. So there was one more piece, and with this I'm really going to conclude the personality of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Go back up to number 5 for just a moment. I skipped this Gemara. When we were going through the biography, but it's important there. Now that you've seen, I pretty much like I've given you anything I could find on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So now that you've seen his personality in totality, you begin to understand this Gemara. Take a look at number 5. So remember again, this Gemara is preoccupied with the fundamental question of what makes great people great. You know what are the you're familiar with the Stephen Covey book. Seven Habits for Highly Effective People. You've heard of this book? Right? Good. Are you doing it in one of your classes? I see a lot of smiles. You just read it. Okay, good. So it's a good meaning. It's a great book, just as an aside. But in general, what people like to do, there's a whole industry now of psychology of what are the traits of successful leaders? What are the traits of successful people? What makes great people great? So the truth is, we could do this. This is actually one of the reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us all of the stories in Tanakh. Why the stories there in Tanakh? Those stories are there because we learn about an Avram Avinu, a Sarai Imenu, a Yitzchak, a Rivka, a Rachel. We learn and we see from their behaviors traits that made them great. What's the goal? The goal is that I take those very traits and I build them into myself. So what makes great people great? How does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai become a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? By the way, especially now even more that we saw the Medrash says, how long did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai live for? Right? 120 years. What did he do the first 40 years of his life? Business. Second 40 years? Learn Torah. Last 40 years? Led. So this is even more amazing that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went from being a regular person, to literally becoming the Gadol Hadar. So what are the traits that are necessary to allow people and to ultimately allow us to find and to actualize our greatness? Take a look at number 5. So this is amazing. So here the Gemara is talking about the incredible qualities and characteristics of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Amru alav Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They said about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai the following. Miyamav lo sach sichas chulin. What does that mean? Never talk regular conversations. So what does that mean to you? Never talk regular conversations. Right. Oh, So this is very important. You see, sometimes we think that Lo Sach Sichas Kol Mitzvah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai only spoke Divrei Torah. Maybe he did, but it's hard to imagine that he doesn't come home after a long day, and his wife says, you know, how was your day? And he doesn't engage in some level of conversation, right? When he just tells her Dvar Torah, I tell you what I learned in Beis Medrash. So it could be, but there's something deeper over here. Sichas Chulin means unnecessary speech. Unnecessary speech, right? Meaning there are plenty of times that you have to talk to people on their level, and you have to talk to people in accordance with what they are interested in. So ultimately, again, not everybody wants to talk Torah, and not everybody wants to hear a Vart. So Sichas Chulin doesn't mean that he never spoke anything that wasn't the Torah thought. What it means is he never spoke in a purposeless fashion. He never spoke unnecessary words. Now, do you understand the profundity of that? Do you understand the profundity of that? So the truth is, all of you are growing up in a world of social media, right? And social media is filled with, right, unnecessary speech, right? Suddenly, again, somebody needs to tweet or needs to Facebook or needs to message what they're having for dinner, right? Look at what somebody just showed me this. They showed me that a friend of theirs is out for dinner. He took a picture of his dinner and he posted it, like on his Facebook thing or whatever. I said, who cares what you're eating for dinner? Right? Who would care what somebody else is eating for dinner? But that's the world we live in. The world of instant communication is people communicate anything and everything. Anything and everything. And ultimately, again, they do so in words that are not even words. You know, this is another piece. You know, again, and all of you are growing up in this world. If I were to ask you, if you want to text someone, I love you, how would you text someone, I love you? I'm sorry? That's beautiful. Fantastic. Right. Then you're Amish. You know, right? Everybody else, if you text somebody, I love you, how would you write that out?
I-L-U-V-U.
Right? So I want to tell you something very important. So good. First of all, it's good to tell people you love them without texting. But if you're going to text it, take the time to spell out the word. Right? If you really love someone, then they are worth the capital I, LOVE-YOU. If you don't, if it's not, they're not important enough to spell out the word, right? Then they don't deserve words. Maybe you just send an emoji, right? Then at the end of the day, that's not really love. That's not. But again, our use of words has become so watered down in contemporary society that we talk things that are meaningless. And even the way we communicate has become less impactful. This is not an anti-technology speech. I'm all for technology if used in the right way. But this is not about technology. This is about how we communicate. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was careful about how he went ahead and used his words. You ever notice, by the way, it's very interesting to see. Ever been in an elevator with a group of strangers? Right? What do people do in an elevator when they're with a group of strangers? Right, so you do one of two things. Either people start like just small talk, nice day, right? Yeah, right. Nice day. Elevator's really slow, right? Right? So either they do small talk or everybody's like checking their email. And it's amazing how you're able to get through your email right when the door's closed, and actually when the door's open, you're suddenly finished. Right? Why? Why do people do that? Because people feel uncomfortable with silence. See, there's nothing uncomfortable about silence. Silence is actually a beautiful thing. There's nothing awkward about it. I mean, I guess if you're on a date, maybe that's something different, right? But when you're with me, there is nothing wrong with having silence. For some reason, because we live in an age of instant communication, so people feel the need to always be conversing. But the truth is, when the elevator is there, you could close your eyes for 2 minutes, right? You could think about something. You could check your email also if you want to. But there's nothing awkward in the silence. And this is true, by the way, in general, and even with, yeah, I'll tell you, this is just a piece of unsolicited dating advice as well. Even with dating, people have this idea that somehow, like, we should have something to constantly talk about. I don't know two people in this world who have always have something to talk about. Always something to talk about. Right? You're with someone for 2 hours and it's nonstop conversation. Silence is part. In fact, I would say that sometimes in healthy relationships, the most beautiful thing is the ability to be next to someone you love in silence. I actually don't have to always talk about stuff with my wife to enjoy her company. If she's by my side and I'm walking, it's okay. I mean, she likes to talk, so I'm happy to always talk. But at the end of the day, the silence does not mean that there's something broken in the communication. Sometimes people go out and there's 4 minutes of silence, or there were 3 moments of silence. That's normal. That's normal. In fact, I would say it's a good midah. You don't always have to be talking. Sometimes you could just be with each other in the moment as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lo sach sicha schulin means not that he only spoke words of Torah. Remember again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the leader of the people, which means he has to deal with a variety of different things. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he never spoke anything unnecessary. There was never the small talk. There was never the talk for just for the sake of making conversation. His words were purposeful. Next, below halach arba amos below Torah or below tefillin. What does that mean? He never walked down amos without Torah. So what is that literal? So again, like I said, all of these things could be literal, but if they're literal, it's hard for us to learn from it because it's quite extreme behavior. Like, it's exceptionally pious behavior. Most of us are not on that level. What it means is dalet amos, right, which is approximately 6 feet, represents the basic unit, the basic area of personal mobility. What it means is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never did anything that was devoid of kedusha. He never walked dalet amos to that Torah until the meeting. In other words, he never did anything mundane. Even the things that he did that were quote unquote not learning, not in the base medrash, were still infused with holiness. This is incredibly important because this is one of the most beautiful tenets of Yiddishkeit. If I were to ask you, what is Judaism's view on materialism? What would you say? What's Judaism's view on material wealth? Good. The answer is Judaism doesn't really have a view per se on material wealth. It has a view on all gashmias. All gashmias is it could be good, it could be bad. It all depends on what, how you choose to use it. Are vacations good or bad? Depends on why you're going on vacation. Right? If you're going on vacation to escape life or to escape your problems, you're going on vacation because you want to do something that's wrong, but you don't want to do it so anybody knows you, so you're going away to do it, then that's wrong. Person's going away on vacation because I want to recharge, because I want to be stronger in my avodas, I just want to be stronger in my family, I want to be stronger in all the time, then wonderful. Everything is about how you use it. When it says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never walked down, so again, and I can't think, this is so important. Person wants, what's Judaism's view of having a big, beautiful house? Good. So this is very important you saw those. Everything depends on what you're using it for. If you're using it because you want the biggest house on the block, because you want to show everybody that you're successful, that's not good. If you're going to use it because you're going to be machnes archim, you're going to host shiurim, you're going to be a place for chesed, you're going to have a then fantastic. Everything is, and obviously even in the world of gashmis, if you're using it well, it still has to be in moderation. And it still has to be with responsibility. But everything is about how you use it. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never walked dalet amos to that Torah until it means everything he did in life was a davar shebekdusha. There was a holy, higher purpose for anything he did, even those things that may not be objectively holy things. Next. This is amazing. The lo kadmo adam bebeis, bless you. Lo kadmo adam bebeis hamedrash. What does it mean? Lo kad, bless you. Lo kadmo adam bebeis hamedrash. What does that mean? What? He was first. So what? What does that mean? What? I heard it. A zrizos. So what does it mean about to have zrizos? What does that mean? What does zrizos show? Excitement. And? Priority and importance. In other words, if you walk in late to something, it means that it's not important to you. You can have a million and one excuses in the world, and I don't mean like for this class. You could come late, right? But if you come late to something, it means it's not a priority. And we know this. We know this for ourselves. If something is important to me and I need to be there, if I have to leave 2 hours early, right? If it's not important to me, okay, I'll leave when I have to leave. Oh, I hit the red light. I couldn't find parking. I'm so sorry that I'm late. I got stuck in traffic. If it was important enough for you, then you would have left, taking in mind that you might hit traffic. And if you didn't take that into mind, it's okay. It just means that it's not important. Zrizos is not just a manifestation of excitement. More importantly, zrizos is you are zaris for things that are important to you. And this is incredibly important. Because again, this comes out all the time. When people take a lackadaisical approach to certain things, what they don't understand is they're broadcasting a message that this thing is not important to me. If you're not careful in your relationships with people, the message you're broadcasting is, my friendship with you is not important. My family is not important. This is not, whatever. When you're zoriz, it's important. Lack of zrizus means a lack of importance. So Yochanan ben Zakkai gets to the Beis Medrash first. It's not just that he's excited to learn Torah. Fantastic. He learned Torah at home also. He doesn't need to go to the Beis Medrash. So why is he getting the Beis Medrash first? Seeing, this is my priority. This is my priority. Being in the Beis Medrash, helping to build the world of Torah is important. Yes?
Just a question like on Gemara in general. When do you know when to take it literally and when not?
So generally, whenever you see some type of like what appears to be hyperbole, right? Like exaggeration. Generally, Chazal tried to teach you a message. So when you say miyamav means forever. Forever is a very, very, very strong term. Especially given the fact we've seen Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai have non-Torah conversations. Right? When?
Vespasian.
Where else? I would say Abba Sikra. Where else? Remember again, what was he doing for the first 14 years of his career? Right? Well, I remember again, actually, we saw, the Medrash says he was in business. If you remember again, we saw the Gemara that says that he was a Rav where? In the Upper Galilee. What was he doing during those years?
He
answered your question. Right. Shaila. One Shaila. Which means that when he's interacting with the townspeople, what is he talking about? Right. Not Shailas. Right. That's generally whenever you see Chazal go out of the way to use an exaggerated term. Never is a very dramatic term. Generally, Chazal is telling you there's a message that's embodied over. Now, again, I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting that the Gemara can't be understood literally. Maybe it is literal. What I'm just suggesting is, the problem is if it's literal, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does not really become a role model for you or for me. Because that's a level of behavior that at least, I can't speak for you. For me, I can't ever expect to reach that level. That's just too way out of my reach, to be realistic. So I think Chazal is trying to give us Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as a role model. Next. V'lo yashan b'beis ha-medrash, lo shinas keva, lo shinas ha-medrash. This is very interesting. Lo yashan b'beis ha-medrash, lo shinas keva, v'lo shinas ha-medrash. What does that mean? He never fell asleep in the Beis Medrash, not for a nap, and not for like a... So first of all, if you ever go to shul, so this is mamish like a real accomplishment for some people, right? Not to fall asleep. Even during the drasha, he mamish didn't fall asleep. So again, what do you think? What is Chazal trying to teach us? What does he never fall asleep? So again, it's the same idea. It's the same idea. It's the point, you know, Rabbi Twersky gives a mashal. He says, you know, he speaks about actually this dynamic of people falling asleep during shiurim and drashas. He says, imagine for a moment you get lost in a bad neighborhood. Now, this example is a bit dated, as you'll see in just a moment. He says, you get lost in a bad neighborhood, and what do? You find some person who looks the least sketchy in the whole neighborhood. You roll down your window and you ask for directions. Okay, like I'm saying already, you see it's a little bit dated, right? I'd be putting into Waze and Google Maps. Okay, I find someone who's going ahead and looks the least sketchy, asking for directions. Rabotersky says, and he's giving you directions how to go ahead and get home and how to get out of this neighborhood. Can you imagine if in the middle of directions, can you imagine? You're not going to nod off in the middle of directions. Mamash, like, these are life-saving words. If I don't get in every single word, if I mix up the right with the left, I'm done. So Rabotersky said, you know, if only we realized that Torah are the life-saving directions of life. If only we realize that every shir and every joshua contains something that is so necessary for us to navigate out of the bad neighborhoods of existence and to get ourselves onto the real superhighway of maximum living. If we only realize that, Rabbi Twersky said, if we only realize that words of Torah were the life-saving directions, how our interactions or how our relationships with shul, with shiurim, with drashas would be dramatically different. So that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realized that every single word was life-saving. Every single word was life-altering. So I'm not going to nap. I'm not going to fall asleep, because to nap and to fall asleep ultimately what? Ultimately goes ahead and runs the risk of missing something incredible. We'll do one more. Below Matsu Adam, I'm sorry. Avelo hirher b'mevuos hametunafos. What does that mean? Below hirher b'mevuos hametunafos. How would you explain that? Hirher means what? Here are thoughts. A mavui Ever hear that expression? Mavui means an alleyway. Hametunaf. Metunaf means dirty. He never had Torah thoughts in dirty alleyways. Now, what does that mean? So literally, there's a halacha that says that if you are in a place where there is a bad odor, or there is a place where there's something disgusting there, you're not supposed to talk Torah, you're not supposed to think Torah. So what it sounds like over here is that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would walk through an actually like physically dirty alleyway where there was either something that smelled, or garbage, or something else. He wouldn't think words of Torah. What does that mean? What's the message in that one? So first of all, it shows the chashivas of Torah. I'm sorry? There's a time and place for everything. So there's a chashivas of Torah, and l'chol davar yesh, l'kitzah, l'chol, right, l'chol zman vo'ez, tachas ha-shamayim. There's a time and place for everything. And this goes back, I think, you know, mevo'os mitunafos, again, we can understand it literally. You can also understand, for example, with Abba Sikra. If you'll notice in his exchange with Abba Sikra, what did he not do? What did he not do with Abba Sikra? I don't know, open the question. What did he not do with Abba Sikra? He didn't share with him what? Divrei Torah. Because ultimately, again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also understood there's a time and place for everything. I'm not going to start giving Abba Sikra divrei chizak or avart, divrei orerus or musar. None of that. Sometimes in life you're in the mevo'os mitunafos, you're in the dirty alleyways, and you need to do what you need to do to get out of there and on to the next thing. There's a time and place for everything in life. All right, you know what? We'll stop over here for today. We'll maybe we should pick up with the rest of number five and then the parish of the Mishnah. Yes. For the Karbanos for? We're talking about the obligation from Har Sinai. I'm sorry. So Rashi points out that in Har Sinai, as part of Revelation, they brought Karbanos. All right, girls, you could just, if you want to, as you're on your way out, you could just deposit your papers here.